and rest them on a flat rock at my feet. I'm not sure, I admit. I hadn't planned that far ahead. As I stand back up, I notice there are a lot of rocks around the size of my foot, most of them covered over with grass. I also spot an old stone bench on the outskirts of the clearing, mostly hidden by overgrown brush. I point at the ground. What do you think the story is with these rocks? They don't look like they were placed here randomly. We begin kicking aside grass and dirt with our shoes, following different paths of rock.
It's like a big circle,
Leo says. Circles inside circles, Tara adds. But some of the stones are missing. There are big gaps. I stop short. The pattern reminds me of something. I pull the pouch out of my back pocket and find Angelina's first postcard. Greetings from Stonehenge, shouts up at me. Stonehenge? It literally means stone circle. I flip the card over. The symbols of my friends swim before my eyes. One circle inside another. It's a labyrinth, I announce, and we're supposed to rebuild it. Standing here, in the shadow of the vortex, everyone can clearly see the writing on the card now. No one questions my conclusion. We fan out and run back into the woods to find more stones to match the others. Ray gets busy clearing off the stones that are already there. We start out very focused on our task, but then start getting silly. We dart in and out of one another's paths, hiding behind trees and scaring one another when we pass. Tara has so many rocks in her arms, I don't know how she moves. Eventually, we have enough and start filling in the gaps. Now that we can clearly see the old ones, it's pretty easy to follow the circular lines. Whether on purpose or not, everyone leaves the innermost circle for me to fill in. I'm not sure they're comfortable being so close to the vortex. Even I don't want to get too close to the tree. What if it sucks me in and spins me around for all eternity? I shudder. From a few feet away, I can see markings on the surprisingly smooth trunk. I can't tell if they're natural or man-made, but a closer inspection will have to wait. When we're done, we step back to admire our handiwork.
We've got some serious labyrinth-building skills,
Leo says, wiping his hands together to dislodge the dirt. I've already wiped mine all over my clothes. Mom will be thrilled.
Totally, Rory says. We could make this our career. People would hire us from all over the...
But she doesn't get to finish. At that moment, a wave of energy, stronger than the one I felt in the store last week, bursts out of the tree and knocks us all off our feet.
Is everyone all right?
Ray asks, crawling over. We groan and sit up.
Everyone say I, if you're okay.
I, we each say in turn.
Aye, aye, matey,
Leo says, doing his best pirate imitation.
That was crazy, Tara says, rubbing her elbows. What happened?
I felt it once before, I tell them. Last Friday night in the store. It almost knocked me over then, too. But Tara and Ray didn't feel anything.
I felt it last Friday night, too, Amanda says quietly.
We all turn to look at her.
It was near the end of the gymnastics meet, so maybe around 8:15-ish?
That's when I felt the one in the store, I tell her.
I figured I'd just imagined it, Amanda says. But then I couldn't shake the feeling that something was different. And then on the way home is when I saw the watch store had gone.
I'm sorry I didn't say something sooner about either of those things. It's almost like I forgot it, like I dreamed it.
I totally get it, I assure her. It's like that for me sometimes, too.
She smiles at me gratefully.
But what was it?
Tara asks.
If the last wave can be connected with the things changing in the alley, which it definitely sounds like it was, then what happened this time? Is the entire alley gone now? None of us have an answer to that.
Look, Rory says, pointing up at the sky. Even Max and Flo felt it.
The two hawks are circling the vortex, one gliding behind the other. Flo lets out a high-pitched cree. Max makes a sound like garunk. They make one more circle, then soar off in opposite directions. We turn our heads to follow Flo, then Max, then back to Flo, as if we're watching a tennis match. My heart starts pounding harder and harder the farther apart they get. Soon we can no longer spot their yellow feet against the blue sky.
I don't understand, Rory says, visibly shaken. I've never seen those birds more than a few feet apart in my entire life.
Me neither, Amanda and Leo echo. Max and Flo have been residents of Willow Falls since before any of us were born. I couldn't believe it when, over the summer, Tara told me they were actually under a 25-year-old love spell.
What does this mean?
Tara asks now. They all look to me for the answer. I close my eyes and try to let the threads of recent events knit together. My eyes snap open. The magic in Willow Falls is unraveling.
What?
The girls shout, grabbing my arms. The vortex is undoing all the work Angelina did, I tell them, beginning to pace in a circle. Anything magical is slowly disappearing, like the alley. We always knew there was something enchanted about it. I've never seen anyone besides us walk down it. Have you guys? They all shake their heads. Leo says,
David said he went into the watch store once with his grandfather when he was a little kid. I remember he said it smelled like feet. Why would a watch store smell like feet?
Ray asks.
He could have been confusing it with someplace else,
Leo says. Either way, I continue, there was always something weird about that street, and we've seen with our own eyes what's been happening there. And now, the spell that bound Max and Flo forever is broken. After being each other's constant companions for a quarter of a century, they're flying in different directions.
Probably a bit relieved,
Ray says under his breath. Tara kicks him. Maybe she should try out for soccer instead of fencing. It takes magic to undo magic, Amanda says firmly. Someone is undoing it.
Chapter 14 and a half. In a house across town. Sylvia Johnston knew immediately that something was wrong. It wasn't only the horrified stares of the women in her knitting circle, or the tingles across her cheeks and down her chin. She could actually see the shadows of the warts out of the corners of her eyes. Her eyes widened, her vision blurred, but she was not imagining it. After all these years, the warts the doctors had claimed were incurable were back, and they were angry.
Sylvia!
Her oldest and dearest friend Ruth Ann shouted, clutching her ball of yarn to her chest.
Your face! Your beautiful face!
Sylvia jumped up, knocking her own yarn and half-made scarf onto the rug. She ran to the mirror to verify what she already knew. Angelina D'Angelo had cured her decades ago, asking nothing in return but her silence. She'd given it willingly, and always made certain to look Angelina in the eye and smile when she passed her in town, while many others turned their heads away. Sylvia's friends gathered around her, saying supportive things like,
"Don't worry, you can hardly see them,"
and,
"With modern medicine, you'll be able to clear those right up,"
and, "Milt's eyes are so bad he won't even notice them." When Sylvia just continued to stare at her reflection, turning her face left and right. Lucille chimed in with,
"Vanity is a young woman's folly. Who cares how you look on the outside?"
But they all knew it wasn't as simple as that. Sylvia plopped back down on the sofa while Ruth Ann hurried to call the pharmacist. Sylvia knew she wasn't the only one Angelina had helped over the years. Far from it. She closed her eyes and said a little prayer that her warts returning would keep the others from suffering a more serious reversal of fortune. Then she let Ruth Ann tie a scarf around her face and lead her to the door. Chapter 15. Grace.
"You don't think Angelina's behind the magic unraveling?" Tara asks. "Do you?"
I shake my head. I think she still has some power left, even if she's trying to hide it, but not nearly enough for something like this. Plus, she worked for 100 years to protect this town, so no way is she going to undo all that.
"What about someone else?" Amanda asks.
"No one else can use the vortex's power," I tell them, sure of it. "Only me, Angelina, and whoever came before her. And that person would have passed her powers to Angelina, like Angelina passed them to me. It's in my DNA or something. So unless I have an unknown evil twin running around..."
"That's it!" Leo shouts.
"Grace doesn't have an evil twin," Rory insists.
"Not that,"
Leo says.
"What if someone took your DNA and can channel your powers that way? Like when you were in the hospital, did anyone take your blood?"
My eyes widen. "Yes, they took a ton those first few days. My parents wanted them to test for everything they could think of. You don't think someone stole it from the hospital, do you?"
"Can you think of any other time someone could have taken blood?"
Tara asks.
"DNA is in your saliva, too,"
Ray points out.
"Did you spit on anyone recently?" Leo asks.
The thought of me spitting on someone and them keeping it is so absurd, I actually laugh. Rory asks Tara if she can borrow her phone. "I'm going to call David," she says. "Since he wants to be a doctor, he reads a lot of stuff about DNA." He picks up right away, and she asks him how someone could get your DNA if they wanted it. "You're with Connor, and I don't want to worry him," she says, in response to what was no doubt his questioning why she wanted to know. "I'll tell you later, I promise." She listens for a minute, then hangs up and hands Tara back the phone. "Well, apparently almost every cell in your body has DNA in it," she reports. "You can get it from skin, blood, mucus, saliva, hair follicles, nails. Hey, you didn't get a manicure recently, did you?" My hand flies up to my head, to the spot where the hair came out with the glasses. The last thread weaves itself into place. I almost choke from trying to get the words out so fast. "It's Connor! He yanked some hair out when he took my giant sunglasses to use for his invention. The follicles must have gotten embedded in there somewhere."
"That's totally it,"
Leo shouts.
"Connor's been looking through those glasses to test them out. I bet Tara's uncle has used them too, and David."
"But what's he using them for?" I ask. "He still hasn't told me."
"He's making frames to attach to people's glasses to watch 3D movies more comfortably,"
Tara says.
"Family's always the last to know, I guess."
"But how is that affecting the magic in town?" I ask.
"I'm no rocket scientist,"
Ray says.
"But it seems to me, when your brother's brain is using the glasses to decode a 3D signal, he is using your DNA at the same time. But since it's combined with his DNA, the vortex is flipping out and randomly undoing the magic. This is fun, like a detective show on the telly."
Leo begins to pace.
"If it happens to us, Amanda and I would be stuck in our birthday again."
"Not only that," Rory says,
David's grandfather will disappear. His dad will be sick again, and so will David one day. I look at Tara, who has gone pale. Her whole life would unravel, too, not to mention all the countless other people whose lives have been touched by the vortex's magic that I'd never even know about. Okay, let's not panic, I tell them. We can solve this. We'll call Connor and David and tell them not to use the glasses again. I'll take them and keep them safe. I'm kind of afraid to destroy them, just in case they're linked to me somehow. Amanda and Leo reach for their phones to make the call. Tara shakes her head.
It won't work, she says. It's not just the one pair now.
What do you mean? I ask.
It was going to be a surprise for your brother. Uncle Roger used Connor's prototype to get 50 samples made. He copied it exactly, exactly, down to the chemical composition in the frames. He's already sent out a bunch to people in the TV industry who he knows. He thinks this could be huge for home theaters, too.
We all stare at her as this sinks in. My DNA will be in all of the glasses. There will be no way to control the effect on the vortex. One by one, the threads that bind this town together, that bind us together, will unfurl and break. I have to shut down the vortex, I announce. You can't, Rory says. You'll lose your powers. What about your destiny? Maybe this is my destiny, I reply. To be the one to shut it down. This way the energy can flow somewhere else where it's needed. But Grace, Amanda says, won't shutting it down just undo everything all at once? I don't know, I admit. I don't think so. But at least this gives us a chance at saving what we can. Will you help me? They exchange looks, then nod. I turn to Leo and Ray. Will you guys watch from outside the labyrinth and make sure nothing goes wrong? If you see me getting sucked into the vortex, rush in.
You better be kidding about that last part, Ray says. Your parents expect you home in one piece, little lady.
I'll do my best. I wave for the girls to follow me. Amanda runs over to Leo. I see her shove something blue into his hand. This reminded me of your eyes, she whispers, louder than she probably intended to. Before he can answer, she turns and joins me and Tara and Rory at the entrance of the labyrinth. I knew I would need them for something big one day, and that day is upon us. I'm tempted to run straight to the tree in the center, but that's not what a labyrinth is for. So we start at the entrance and march along Tara's outer circle. The labyrinth curves, and we're in Rory's circle, then Amanda's. Finally, the four of us stand in the middle, in front of the tree.
What now? Tara asks.
I don't know, I admit. We need to connect to it somehow. I kick off my sneakers and peel off my socks. The others do the same. I dig my feet into the soil, trying to ground myself in the earth. The others follow. The pulsing beat of the vortex now matches my own. I imagine a beam of energy entering through the top of my head, reaching deep into the source of the vortex's power. Then I ask it, out loud, very politely, to shut itself down. It doesn't. I'm definitely connected to it, though, because I can feel that another wave is about to hit. Duck! I shout. We duck and hold on to one another as the wave bursts forth. It's easier to handle when prepared. This time, we're just a little windblown. Grace? Rory tugs on my sleeve. You're shorter. What? You've shrunk like an inch, Amanda says, her voice shaking. The magic is still coming undone. Okay, I say, as bravely as possible. I can live with losing an inch. Let's hope everyone else was spared.
Why didn't it stop when you asked? Rory asks.
Maybe because you forgot this,
Ray shouts from where he and Leo are standing on the stone bench.
Again.
It's the bag of seeds.
Catch,
he says, and lobs it overhand. I watch as the bag sails through the labyrinth, almost in slow motion. Tara reaches up and catches it neatly with one hand.
Here you go, she says. Maybe baseball instead of fencing? Rory suggests.
I pull on the ribbon, and the top of the bag opens. Without thinking of what I'm supposed to do, I reach in and grab a handful of seeds. I sprinkle them all over the ground around the tree. Oh, powerful vortex, I say, feeling a little silly. I am grateful for all the bounty you have given me and the whole town for so long. I turn over the bag and let the last few seeds drift to the ground. But we really, really need you to stop now.
Well, Rory says after a moment, that ought to do it.
We watch the tree, barely daring to breathe. Stubbornly, the tree just keeps pulsing with energy. Fear sends icy spikes up my back. What if I can't make the vortex stop? Tara moves first.
What are these marks?
She asks, stepping closer to the tree. She traces them with her finger.
It looks like someone carved pictures into the trunk.
The rest of us inch a little closer.
They're animals, Amanda exclaims. Look, here's an owl. Here's a duck. I'm not sure what this one is.
It's a bunny, Rory says grimly.
These are spirit animals, Tara says.
I told you so,
Ray shouts over to us. We ignore him.
Each of them must be from someone who could control the vortex, Tara says. I bet we all know who the duck was.
Angelina, we cry out at the same time.
What's yours, Grace? Rory asks.
I look at Tara and out at Ray. I still don't know. It's a lion, Amanda says so quietly, I almost don't hear her.
What did you say?
Rory asks.
Grace's spirit animal is a lion,
Amanda says, louder this time. How do you know that? I ask. She reaches into her pocket and pulls out a yellow plastic lion with what looks like a toothpick stuck in the bottom of it.
It's the cupcake topper from the cupcake Rory brought me, she says.
There was a lion on a SpongeBob cupcake? I ask. She nods.
I figured it must have gotten mixed up with the one next to it.
I didn't even notice when I bought the cupcake, Rory says.
Why did you keep it? Why did you bring it?
She glances over at the bench where Ray and Leo are, then says,
It's kind of embarrassing. I collect things that remind me of Leo. You know, Leo the lion, the astrology sign.
Amanda allows herself a peek at Leo, who is listening intently, his hands grasped together. She quickly looks back at me.
But Grace, the lion wasn't about Leo. It was about you.
How can you be sure? I ask. If I carve the wrong animal in the trunk, who knows what might happen?
I'm sure, she says firmly. Angelina told you guys to get me that cupcake, right?
Rory and I exchange a look of surprise.
How did you know?
She asks.
Come on, that move has Angelina written all over it. A SpongeBob cupcake when I need it to be reminded of what me and Leo mean to each other, and it just happens to have a random lion cupcake topper on it when you need to find a spirit animal, one that represents courage, strength, and power more than any other?
She's right, Tara says.
That would be too much of a coincidence. Do I even need to say it? I shake my head. I know, I know. There are no coincidences in Willow Falls.
That's the truth, sister,
Tara says, bending down to pick up a pointy stick.
Now get carving.
I do my best, but when I'm done, the lion looks more like a fluffy kitten than a fierce king of the jungle. Hopefully it's good enough. I lay the stick back down. Amanda puts out her hand, and I take it. Then I reach for Rory's, and Rory reaches for Tara's. Tara takes Amanda's, and the circle around the tree is complete. Brace yourselves, I say. We all dig our feet back into the earth again and close our eyes. I focus on feeling like a lion and wait until I actually feel the strength and courage of him within me. Then I thrust him out of me and into the tree. I open my eyes. The carving no longer looks like a kitten. There's no doubt now what it is. The others still have their eyes closed, unaware that I've set things in motion. Or at least, I hope I have. At first, nothing happens. Then it happens all at once. The wind howls as branches begin to unfurl themselves, slowly at first, then picking up speed, whipping over our heads. Our hair flies around our faces, but we don't let go of one another's hands. I see Ray and Leo jumping around in alarm, but they don't dare get too close. Apples fly off the branches in all directions, flinging themselves at our feet, bouncing off stones, filling the pathways of the labyrinth. I blink, and the tree is no longer a tree. It's a swirling tunnel of pure energy, pure possibility. I can see inside it, to the calm part in the very center. In there lies the building blocks of the whole universe. Energy waits to become matter. It waits for our choices to make reality solid. I finally understand what Angelina meant with her physics lesson. Everything is real, and nothing is real. This brings me a great sense of peace. As my connection to the vortex weakens, my body is filled with its own energy, and it shines out of every cell. This is the glow I see when I look at my friends and family, what I've always seen, if I only knew to look. This energy links us together. It binds us and protects us. It reminds us we are part of a greater whole. I feel a surge of gratitude and love for the brave girls beside me. I'm surprised to see their eyes are still shut, their faces a range of emotions. I squeeze their hands, and suddenly, I'm where they are, seeing what they see, feeling what they feel. They are not here. They are in their futures, our futures. The vortex is feeding them a great gift as its power quickly drains. The last few branches of the apple tree snap into place. The pulsing in the ground slows to a dull thump, and then to nothing at all. Somewhere, the energy is already building beneath a new town where someone else will be chosen to wield it. And me? I'm just a regular girl now, standing in front of a regular tree in a regular little town. But I have glimpsed the true nature of reality. Someday, I'll learn more, and I'll share it. People will listen. And they'll understand that they are part of something amazing.
Rory at the Vortex.
1 minute, I'm holding my friend's hands in the labyrinth. The next, I'm on a sunny football field. But not a real one. It's a movie set. I can tell because there are lights and boom microphones and people running around yelling cut and send in the extras. A group of actors in football uniforms are getting direction by a man in a backward baseball cap. I'm standing behind a row of sound equipment, so I can watch the scene being filmed without getting in the way. Jake must be one of the actors on the field. Otherwise, why would I be on a film set? I glance around and find an empty chair with the words Director Jake Harrison printed on the back. I back away in surprise, then grin. He did it! He followed his dream and became a director. A few seconds later, the group of actors breaks up, and the man in the baseball hat heads to the chair. He looks over at me and gives me a big grin and a thumbs up before sitting down. My heart flips over. It's Jake, but he's grown up, at least 30 or 35. I can't tell ages of old people. If he's grown up, I must be too. I glance down at my hands. I don't register if they look older or not because I am mesmerized by the diamond ring and gold wedding band on my left hand. Now my heart is really racing. We're together. We're married.
Action,
Jake shouts. The crowd immediately hushes up. I catch my breath as a little boy around 4 or 5 runs across the field in an oversized football jersey that says Pirates on it. At first, I think it's Sawyer, but it can't be. If I'm grown up, he would be too. As the boy gets closer, I can see he's wearing an eye patch. I have to put my hand over my mouth to keep from laughing. The boy stops in front of the largest camera and says, "Go Pirates!" The football players cheer and race onto the field.
"Cut!"
Jake calls.
"Print! Great job, everyone!"
The little boy beams, sees me, and starts running over. As he passes Jake, the two of them high-five, and then the boy runs right into my arms. He's beautiful.
"Mom!" the boy shouts up at me. "Guess what? Uncle Jake said I could keep my eye patch. Now I can be a pirate for Halloween."
My heart speeds up. I'm a mom? Uncle Jake? He said, "Uncle Jake." The boy breaks away from me and races toward a man in jeans and a t-shirt whose face I can't see from this angle.
"Dad!" he shouts. "Did you see my scene?"
The man says,
"Of course, buddy. You were awesome."
He swings the boy up onto his shoulders and parades him around the set. I look down at my finger. This is the man who has my heart now. There's no doubt. I feel a surge of love so powerful, it almost knocks me off my feet. I look back over at Jake. He's deep in discussion with a woman holding out a movie script. The scene begins to fade away. I try to reach out for something to hold on to, something to keep me grounded here. But all I feel are hands in mine. I look down, hoping it's the boy's hands or the man's. But they are gone. I open my eyes. Tara and Amanda still have theirs closed. But Grace doesn't. She beams at me, her face streaked with tears and dirt, her hair wild around her. She squeezes my hand, and I squeeze back, not daring to speak. I blink fast, trying to focus. Something happened just now, something besides the vortex shutting down. I'm sure of it, but whatever it was has slipped away, like the memory of a story you heard once a long time ago. But it was a good story. A really, really good story. I know that much, at least.
Tara, at the vortex.
1 minute, I'm up to my ankles in dirt. Then the next, I'm seated in one of about 500 gray folding chairs on a huge rolling lawn surrounded by immense white stone buildings. I'm in a light blue dress and heels. Heels? Am I back at David's bar mitzvah in the dress I borrowed from Amanda's sister? But no, that doesn't make sense.
There's no way this place is in Willow Falls. I look down at my lap. Resting there is a white booklet that reads, Medical School Graduation Ceremony.
Isn't this exciting?
A woman's voice asks beside me. I turn toward her so quickly I get dizzy. It's Grace, but she's all grown up, at least 22. That must mean I'm older than that. Her red hair isn't quite as bright as when we were kids, and it's shorter, but her eyes are sparkling and full of life.
The Hamburglar has worked so hard for this,
a man says on the other side of Grace. Wait, it's not a man, it's Connor, who I guess is a man now. He's dressed more casually than everyone, in jeans and a button-down shirt. Pretty much the same outfit Uncle Roger used to wear every day since he worked at home.
But no one knows that better than you, Tara, right?
I force myself to smile, even though I have no idea what he's talking about. Grace puts her hand on mine. I know it was rough there back in college, with you and David not being together for a while, and your dad getting sick. But I'm so glad you all pulled through it. You two belong together. My heart starts thumping. I know she said something about me and David, but all I can think is, my dad was sick? Will be sick? Is still sick? Is not here anymore? My dad? I squeak out.
There they are,
Connor says. He stands up and waves at a group of people looking for seats.
Mr. and Mrs. Goldberg! Mr. and Mrs. Brennan! Over here!
I practically weep with relief to see my parents, older, but very much alive. Dad is walking with a cane, but other than that, he looks perfectly healthy and still just as tall. They catch sight of us and start making their way through the crowd. I watch as a man in the audience stands up in front of my dad and says something to him. I can't hear what it is, though, but my dad nods and reaches into his pocket for something. His wallet, maybe? David's mom arrives at our seats first. She is still so beautiful, maybe more so. Her curly hair is still dark, and she only has a few more wrinkles than she did when I met her. She laughs and says to me,
Since the TV series based on his last book came out, your dad can't go anywhere without signing autographs, Tara.
So it wasn't his wallet he'd reached for. It was a pen.
I bet you have that trouble, too, she continues, squeezing my arm.
Me? Why would anyone want my autograph? She sits down and beams at the three of us.
There must be something in the water in Willow Falls, she says. Look at you all. One about to publish her fifth children's book, one starting graduate school in physics, and one award-winning inventor.
She waves her booklet at the stage.
And my son, soon to be a doctor.
My head begins to spin as they keep talking.
Our other friends did pretty good for themselves, too,
Connor says.
Yeah, Grace says. Remember my best friend Bailey? She's a costume designer for movies now, in Hollywood. And Amanda Ellerby just opened a music school for kids.
Connor jumps in again.
Leo Fitzpatrick's on his way to becoming the youngest mayor in Willow Falls history. And Rory just got back from helping to build new schools in Africa. I heard she met a guy there.
Really?
Grace asks, leaning forward. What is he like?
How should I know?
Connor says, pinching his sister playfully on the arm.
Ask her yourself when they get here.
I'm getting dizzy from turning back and forth between them so quickly. I want to savor each bite, but each piece of information is coming so quickly. My parents and David's dad arrive next to take their seats.
David looks very handsome in his cap and gown,
my mom says, pointing at the row of graduates who have started to file into the empty seats in the first few rows.
Very distinguished, don't you think?
I scan the line, but at first, I can't find him. Then I realize I'm looking for the 13-year-old version of him. I start searching from the front of the line again, but don't get too far before Connor and Grace start whooping and laughing. My mom gasps. Dad says, "Whoa!" Mr. Goldberg says, "That's my boy!"
Grace grabs my arm. "Finally!" she shouts.
"What do you mean?" I ask.
"Look!"
She drags me to my feet and points at the graduates. The very last one is hanging back from the rest of the line a bit. He's wearing wire-rimmed glasses, and I can see David's dark hair peeking out from under the square graduation cap. And on the top of the cap are written 5 words. "Tara, will you marry me?"
Amanda at the Vortex.
First comes the smell, the overwhelming smell of apples on the breeze. For a minute, I think it must be coming from the Vortex, but even though I can still feel my feet in the earth, I know I'm not in the circle anymore. After the smell come the voices, little voices, boys and girls.
"Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday, Grandpa and Grandma! Happy birthday to you!"
Then someone fiddles with the back of my head, and I realize they're untying a blindfold.
"Here we are, Mom and Dad,"
a woman's voice says.
"What do you think?"
I blink as my eyes take in the scene. I'm still in Apple Grove, only it looks very, very different. The mall in the distance is now a gleaming white circular building. There's a large clearing in the middle of the grove with picnic tables and decorations. Our baby trees are fully grown, all but one now bearing ripe red apples. An old man is standing beside me, blinking and beaming. He has kind, loving, mischievous eyes and a sprig of blue flowers pinned to his shirt. I realize with a jolt that it's Leo.
"You're so old,"
I blurt out. My voice doesn't sound like mine. It sounds like my grandmother's. Leo laughs.
"If I'm old, what does that make you?"
The laughter spreads to the group of smiling faces around us, faces I don't recognize, from middle-aged down to 3 or 4. Wait, that woman's nose looks like my mom's nose, and that man's smile is exactly like Leo's. With another jolt, it hits me that these people are my children and grandchildren. Leo is my husband, and we're old. Really old, like 65. Of course, the big 6-5 spelled out in apples on the ground could have told me that, too. I can't take my eyes away from Leo. He still has his curls, even though they're mostly white now.
"Wait till you see your gift,"
the same woman says. "Our daughter." She has the same soft blonde hair as my mom and Kylie have. Had? I look around, but don't see either of them. The woman takes my hand. "The kids worked very hard on it," she says. I look over at the group of kids. The littlest one presses a button on a small device in her hand, and a holographic image appears a few feet away from us. I back up, startled, but Leo's hand is there to steady me.
"Watch, Nana Mandy,"
the little girl says. She can't be more than 3. In mid-air, the word "birthdays" appears. Then images slowly fade in and out. Many of them I recognize. There we are bowling at our 6th birthday party. There we are posing with the hypnotist at our 11th. For our 12th, we are standing in almost this exact spot, having just planted our first tree. Most of the images are totally unfamiliar, though. In one, we are around 15 or 16, at the beach.
In another, we are a few years older, on a boat. I watch, open-jawed, as we grow up and grow old, together. At the end, a short video plays. It's Leo and me as babies, at our first party. We're babbling and crawling. Then, almost at the same moment, stand and walk toward each other on wobbly legs. This moment is family lore in my house. I've never seen video of it before, though. They must have tracked it down from someone at the party. Or maybe I found it sometime over the last few decades. My daughter hands me a tissue. I hadn't realized tears were pouring down my cheeks. "Are you all right, Mom?" she asks. Leo turns away from our first steps and takes my hands in his. I notice his eyes are misty, too.
"Amanda Ellerby Fitzpatrick, I will always keep walking toward you," he says, kissing me on the forehead.
He keeps his lips pressed there, and I close my eyes as our family claps and hoots. Relief pours through me. Sometimes your first love does get to be your last.
"Amanda,"
a boy's voice says, then more urgently,
"Amanda."
Someone is tugging at my arm. I look down, expecting it to be another grandchild. But it's Leo, and I'm standing in the labyrinth, and everyone is gathered around me with concerned looks on their faces.
"Are you okay?"
Leo asks.
"You didn't open your eyes for the longest time."
He slides a leaf out of my hair. I reach up to my forehead, feeling the ghost of a touch pressed there. Then I blink, and it's gone. "Something happened in the circle," I say. "Right?"
"Yes," Grace says. "We did it."
She turns me around to face the center. The tree. Its branches are straight, when moments before they were wound tight around the trunk. The apples that were hanging from its branches had been flung all over the ground. "Was there something else, too?" I ask. Grace doesn't answer. "I think I went someplace," Rory says, stepping up beside me. She's absently rubbing her left hand.
"Me too,"
Tara says, a faraway look in her eyes. "Me three," I say. I turn to Leo and really look at him for the first time in weeks. I reach for his hand. In front of everyone, I tell him the truest thing I know, although I don't know how I know it. "Leo Fitzpatrick, I will always keep walking toward you."
Chapter 16. Grace.
When I get back home, exhausted and exhilarated, Connor and David are waiting on the porch steps, a large cardboard box between them. They both stand up as I cross the lawn. Seeing them like this, Connor's eyes twinkling, David healthy and carefree, with their whole futures in front of them, any lingering doubt I had over closing the vortex and giving up my powers drifts away for good. Connor opens his mouth to greet me, but before the first words leave his mouth, I get a vision of his future. First come the 3D glasses, then more gadgets, then he sets his sights on solving bigger problems. One day, he's going to help figure out a way to turn everyday trash into fuel. It will cap a lifetime of making people's lives easier and better in both small and large ways. I allow myself to watch him step up to a platform to accept an award. How proud our parents are.
"I have amazing news,"
Connor says, reaching into the box.
"I wanted you to be the first person to have these."
Hearing his voice snaps me back to the present. I can still have visions. That's a surprise. Unable to help myself, I giggle.
I think the vortex gave me a little gift, too. I reach out and hug him. I'm so proud of you, big brother. I can't tell him what I saw of his future, but there's no need. It will happen either way. He untangles himself from my embrace.
I haven't even shown you yet.
He hands me a pair of pink-framed tinted glasses and says,
I couldn't have done it without your help.
He doesn't know how true that is, just not in the way he thinks.
Try them on, he urges. David, give her your regular glasses to put on first.
David obliges, and I slip them on. I was prepared for everything to look fuzzy, the way it does when I slip on my dad's glasses for fun, but I can see perfectly. David, your eyes must not be that bad at all. Nothing's even blurry.
Oh, right,
he says.
That's because the lenses are just plain glass. I only wear them to make me look smarter. I got contacts over the summer.
Connor and I stare at him, shocked.
Are you serious, dude?
Connor shouts, then starts cracking up.
This whole idea was because of you, and you didn't even need them? Man, that's messed up!
I can only stare, my jaw hanging open. Everything we went through today was because Connor was inspired by David and his glasses, and now he won't even need them?
Hey,
David tells Connor,
believing I needed them got you to come up with your first invention, right? And this is just the beginning. One day, you'll be huge.
He's right, of course, and I have to believe this was how it was supposed to happen. Maybe the vortex was ready to move on, and it really was my destiny to help it. I leave Connor still shaking his head at David and make my way into the house. I don't have the energy, literally, to tell them the story now. I'm sure David will hear all about it from Tara. I wish there was a way that Connor won't feel bad when he learns his part in it, but I don't see a way around it. We've never lied to each other, and I won't start now. I flop down on my bed, more tired than I ever remember being, bone tired. I close my eyes, and am instantly in my garden. I didn't even have to use the elevator this time. As soon as I smell the fruit trees, I'm wide awake. Then I'm laughing. The garden has been busy since my last visit. Every piece of land not taken up by a tree or flower or sand or sea is now home to one of the objects that had disappeared from Angelina's store. If this were my bedroom, my mom would freak out until I cleaned it. But it's not my bedroom, and no one else can find this place. Well, except Angelina, who seems to have an all-access pass to my brain. I look around, hoping she's hiding behind a lampshade or a faded watercolor painting of a fruit bowl. But I don't see any sign of her. I wonder if she knows about shutting down the vortex. And if she does, I hope she understands why I did it. A bag of seeds appears on top of a rosebush, or perhaps it was always there and I never noticed it. It's identical to the one left for me on the counter at the store. I carefully untangle it from the thorny branches and slip it into my pocket. I'm curious to see if it makes it back to the real world, or the waking world, or whatever the difference is between here and there. Before I find out, though, I take one last look around at all the stuff filling up the garden. Looks like I'll have a lifetime to make my way through wonders unimagined. But first, I'm kinda in the mood for pizza.
Chapter 17. Grace. 30 years later.
The animals carved in the smooth bark are still visible, their shapes blurred from decades of weather. How young we were the day that I drew mine. How much responsibility we had. How lucky we were to have one another. I reach out and run my finger over the lion. how lucky we still are.
I like what you've done with the place,
a voice says from behind me. I whirl around, the last of the seeds in my hands falling to the earth. Not 10 feet away, Angelina D'Angelo sits on the stone bench beside the labyrinth, a wooden cane at her side. I have not seen her in nearly 30 years. Is it really you? I ask, afraid to even move. Can she possibly still be alive?
You've gotten taller,
is her only response. I've grown up.
So you have. You all have.
I gesture down the hill to the big tent beside the apple trees. Have you seen the others? Tara and David's son is having his bar mitzvah in a few minutes. Can you believe it? We all came back for it. Amanda and Leo are down there, Rory and her family, Connor. I know they would all love to see you. She smiles, and her duck-shaped birthmark wiggles. I can still spot it hidden in the folds of her many wrinkles. She looks old. She looked old when I was a child, of course, but now she looks truly old, ancient, even, and tired.
I saw them, she says. They didn't see me. That's the way it should be.
She uses the cane to stand up from the bench. I am struck by how small she is.
That was very brave what you did, she says, shutting down the vortex, giving up the long life that was your due, and of course, relinquishing your powers. Well, most of them, right?
She says that last part with a wink. My suspicions were correct all those years ago. She had kept some, too. Yes, most of them, I reply with my own sly grin. But really, I had to shut it down. I didn't have a choice. I couldn't let it undo everything you'd done, everything we'd done.
We always have a choice,
she says firmly.
I doubt I would have been brave enough to choose as you did.
You were braver than anyone, I assure her. She tilts her head at me.
You are a scientist now?
Yes, a physicist. I research quantum theory. That's the study of how subatomic particles... She cuts me off.
You study the nature of reality.
I smile. Yes.
How sneaky,
she says. But I can tell she's pleased. I laugh. Yes, I may have a little more insight into it than most people in my field. Where have you been all these years, Angelina?
Oh, I got around,
she says.
Mostly I visited other vortexes. I was drawn to them, quite truthfully. Sometimes there were people there, kids like yourself, who needed guidance.
Did you put them all in comas on their 10th birthday, too? She laughs at my teasing.
If necessary.
Then she adds,
not all of them accepted their destiny and rose to meet it, like you did. And sometimes there was no one there at all.
And Bucky? I look around, hoping against hope that he is here too. She shakes her head.
He was a wonderful companion, the most charming fiddler I ever did see. But he got tired. He was ready to go.
I feel my heart swell for Bucky, or, as I knew him best, my great Uncle Bill, who protected me when I was a child and gave the best birthday presents. And you? How are you feeling? She smiles.
I've still got a little magic in these old bones.
Laughter and music wafts up on the wind from below. Come down the hill with me, Angelina. The ceremony hasn't started yet. She shakes her head.
I'll just sit up here and enjoy the shade.
I step closer and reach out my arms for her. She lets me hug her, as she had on the train platform decades ago. She feels both incredibly frail and incredibly powerful. She changed the world, and so few people know it. There will never be another like her.
Send me a postcard every now and again, okay? I ask.
She smiles, pats me on the arm, and waits. That's my signal to leave.
You're sure I can't convince you to come? I ask one more time. David and his son are going to sing together.
She nods. I look around for a car, but don't see any.
Well, can I take you someplace afterward, then?
I'll be fine, she insists. Go, enjoy the party and your friends. Give them my love.
At that, she turns away, and I know it's really time to go. I lean over and kiss her on top of her head. Then I hurry back toward the party. I make it as far as the edge of the clearing before turning back around. Angelina is standing beside the apple tree in the center of the labyrinth, its branches straight and proud. I can still remember how it looked before, when it was hugging itself. I dare not breathe as I watch Angelina reach out and touch the smooth bark with both hands. I blink, and she's gone. I blink again. She's really gone, like gone, gone. I hear a rustling behind me, and for a second I think, oh, it's going to be Angelina. She was just playing a trick on me. But even before I turn around, I know it's not her. Although decades have passed since I placed the protective bubbles around them, I can still sense the distinctive energies of Amanda, Rory, and Tara. They didn't see what I saw. I don't need to be able to read their minds to know they've come to get me. We stand side by side, grown-ups with our grown-up party dresses and our busy lives, and together we gaze out at the labyrinth we built 3 decades ago. I'm sure I'm not the only one picturing our younger selves racing in circles through the trees, finding the perfect stones, feeling the surge of energy when we connected with the vortex. They don't remember what they experienced in those final moments, those glimpses of their futures. But I do. I've kept that secret all these years. Everyone should get to live into their own futures, making things happen and letting things happen in equal measure, as one wise old woman once told me. Where's the fun if you already know how it will work out?
A lot of old ghosts up here, Amanda says, breaking the silence.
I nod. And some new ones.
What do you mean? Rory asks.
Tell us on the way down, Tara says,
linking her arm in mine.
It's about to start.
A minute later, David and his son begin to sing.
This is Kathleen McInerney. We hope that you have enjoyed this production of Graceful by Wendy Mass. This program was produced and directed by Jerry Maybrook. Executive producer, Paul R. Gagne. Original music by Jack Sundred. Print edition published by Scholastic Press, an imprint of Scholastic, Inc. Text copyright 2015 by Wendy Mass. Production copyright 2015 by Scholastic, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.